Access number 29549, Mr. John McGough, Grill 3. Now, how did you come to leave the Essex Regiment? Because you volunteered, don't you? Tell us the whole story of how you come to volunteer to leave them.
Well, at the time I was a corporal in the Essex Regiment, and one day on the notice board I saw an appeal for recruits for either the Parachute Regiment, the Glider Pilot Regiment, or the Reconnaissance Corps. You had the three choices. So I thought to myself, well, I never had any terrific interest in flying, but just thought the glider pilot and it sounded exciting. So I went to the sergeant major and says, I'm going to volunteer for the glider pilot regiment. He says, you're not. He says, we spent a lot of money and time training you. We want you to stay with us. You'll be a sergeant soon. But in spite of all his and the commanding officer's efforts to make me not volunteer for the glider pilot regiment, I had the right to do so, which I did. And then I got accepted for an interview.
And what do you remember of the interview?
Well, we were sent to RAF Cardin in the Bedfordshire for two or three days, all prospective glider pilots, men from every regiment in the British Army, every unit in the British Army. We spent two and a half days there on interviews, medical checks, etc. The medical check, I remember, were particularly good in that instead of one doctor examining you, you move from one doctor to another, and each doctor specializes in a special part of the body. So when you pass those doctors, you're absolutely, you're fit.
Now, that's medical. What else did you do at Cardington?
We did face-to-face interviews.
Now, what were they like? What were they after?
Well, the obvious thing they said, why did you want to join? What you thought of the regiment you're in at the moment? And what you thought that glider flying was going to be like, what it was like. I can't remember much more, but we were there two or three days.
And what about the sort of physical test, educational tests, physical tests, psychological tests? What do you remember of those?
Well, the psychological tests were interviews. They asked you questions.
That's the interviews.
Yes. Yes.
What about the PT test, the physical test?
To be quite truthful, I cannot remember what it is actually entailed, but we did do physical tests.
But you don't remember much about it?
No.
And educational tests, you don't remember that either?
Well, we had to write essays. I had to write an essay, I think.
So, you were accepted?
I was accepted. I got back to my unit, the Essex Regiment, in a short while. They told me I've been accepted for training as a glider pilot.
And so what happened next?
Well, for the first 6 weeks of my time in the glider pilot regiment was down in Salisbury Plain.
Now, which camp was that at?
I got the name for there, I think.
Tilshead.
Tilshead Camp. We spent 6 weeks of indoctrination and training.
Is that the glider pilot depot? It
was the depot of the glider pilot regiment at the time. It changed later on. But at the time, we spent 6 weeks in...
What was your first impression when you joined them? Because you'd been used to the Essex regiment. That was your family.
Yeah.
How did you feel when you first joined the glider pilot regiment, when you rolled up there? Probably in June, you reckon?
Well, the men, the fellow trainees who were accepted the same as me from all over all the corps and units of the British Army, it took you some time to get used to them. Some had Berries, some had Glengarries on, and all different cap badges and different signs. But we all sort of melted in together. And,
The NCOs.
They had three sergeant majors from the Brigade Guard specially seconded to the glider pilot regiment, and we were very, very well trained by them in drill, discipline, turnout.
Now, what were these NCOs like? What do you remember? Because some of them are quite well known. I mean, you might not remember them, but what do you remember of them? You know, what were they like, these NCOs?
They looked like... The first thing that I remember about them was the turnout. Wasn't a hair out of place on the head. not a speck of dust in the uniform, an absolute men, when you looked at them, you couldn't find fault with the dress or the bearing. Excuse me. Very, very formal, very, very formal men. They didn't swear, to my knowledge, didn't use bad language. They tried to set the standard that they hoped you would achieve in your turnout and dress. But it was a very tough regime for 6 weeks. I was used to it, being an infantryman.
Now tell me about the training you did then.
We did, again, a lot of marching were in full kit. Come back from a long march, 10 minutes, changing the PT. You had no time to think in between sessions. One thing led to another. It was general toughening up and discipline. And some men who couldn't accept the discipline were sent back to the unit.
But you were determined?
Oh, I was very determined. I thought, well, I'm an Irishman. I'm amongst all these English and Scotsmen and Welshmen. I'm going to do better than them. Because national pride.
You were given some theoretical training in flying. Can you tell us, were these lectures? What was that?
Yeah, well, lectured about airframes, how airplanes flew, lectured about the engines, and lectured about how you controlled them when you were flying in the air. Just general discussion of airplanes to familiarise yourself with them.
And how did you enjoy the lectures? Did you understand them? Were you all right?
Oh, yes. I think if you had average common sense, it wasn't too hard to understand them, no.
One thing that happened there is unusual. There's a terrible accident with a shell hitting a hut.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about what you remember of that?
That I wasn't in residence then. I don't know if before or after.
Right. We'll leave it then because yes. It's more so it happened another time.
It did happen another time because shell landed amongst the people attending the doctor.
Now, when you finish this. Were you examined during this course? Because you get a maroon beret. Tell us about that.
When you at the end of your 6 weeks.
Is that a course you have to pass then?
Oh, you had to pass the 6 weeks course.
So how did they assess you?
Well, on your willingness to perform any task they give you, on your personal turnout, and your enthusiasm. That's as far as I can remember.
What did it mean when you got the purple beret?
Well, it was a very, very marvellous day because we were... Maroon beret.
So it was an important... Sorry, I interrupted you. It was an important day.
Yeah, it was because we then knew we'd passed the 6 weeks introductory course and we were members of the Airborne Forces, which was the maroon beret. We're very proud of that.
Had they replaced yet your pride in the Essex Regiment, or were you truly
proud?
No,
we were proud, but it took some time to build up the degree of enthusiasm I had in the Essex Regiment for the Gladapalle Regiment. But it did come. It did come.
Anything else about your time at Tilthead, that first time? You seem to have been there 6 weeks, June, July, August, 42.
No, there's nothing else I can remember about it, really.
And then in August, you go to number 16 Elementary Flying Training School at Burniston, near Derbyshire. Now, what do you remember about your first... What happened when you arrived there?
Well, we went to Burniston, and we were based, believe it or not, our billets were at Repton College, the famous college, Repton College, which is quite near to there. And
tell me about those billets first, because that's quite interesting. I didn't know that.
No.
What were the billets like?
I can't remember.
Okay, all right.
But what the students used to occupy. They must have took some of the billets off them when we were there.
But you don't remember what they were like?
No, I don't.
You're probably busy flying. Now, how did they start you on flying? I mean, you've got ground training, you've got air training. Perhaps if we do the ground training first. What were you learning on the ground at Burniston?
An elaboration of what we, I told you, tales that we learned about aeroplanes and the carried it to a further degree, all about airmanship, why the wings were shaped where they were. Why the wings were shaped as they were, why airplanes that got below a certain speed would fall out of the sky, the stalling speed and the things like that. All about aircraft.
Did you learn simple engine, you know, about engines?
Just very, very basic. Because we were not responsible for the engine. We had to know about them, but of course the RAF ground crew, when we were on the aerodromes, they looked after the engines.
Anything else you did on the ground?
Navigation. Yes, we studied navigation. Navigation.
Now, what type of navigation? How far did you go with that? Because that can be a very difficult subject.
Stellar navigation. Taught us all about the different combination of stars in the sky, how to recognise them, and to name them. I used to be able to name them all, Betelgeuse, Aldebaran, and so on, but I can't remember them anymore. But when you'd been taught that, when you were down at night, you could see and say, that's such and such a constellation, and if you fly towards it, you're going in such and such a direction, that sort of thing. I still got my navigation book upstairs with my exercises in it.
Did they teach you things like compensating for drift, you know, wind drift? Because, you know, if you're flying in one
place,
did they teach you that?
They taught us that, and also compass error. They taught us about compass error as well.
Compass error?
Compass error.
What do you mean?
Well, when you fly with a compass, sometimes you get a deviation left or right. It depends, and you had to compensate for the compass error. I'm not quite sure what it is now.
It's a long time ago to remember that sort of
thing.
Don't worry about that. So that was on the ground. Now, take me through your flying. I mean, you were going to be flying Tiger Moth.
Yes.
The Tiger Moth.
Yes.
Now, how do they start you? You've never flown before, I presume.
Never flown.
So they take you up on air, because it's all dual instruction, isn't it?
Dual instruction.
Do you remember your first flight?
I do.
What do you remember about it? How did you feel? Was it a good idea, do you think?
I was rather overawed. I thought I'll never manage all this. All you've got to remember to fly an aeroplane. But the instructors were specially picked RAF NCOs.
I'll come to that. But this first air experience flight, what did you think of it? I mean, did you enjoy it? What did you think?
I absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved
it.
Just the fact that you're going along there and suddenly you're off and you could see the whole panorama vista of the countryside. And at the same time, you've been told, no, remember this, remember that, remember the other.
Even on your first flight?
On your first flight.
Now, tell me about the dual control instruction you had, because that was just the first flight, isn't it?
Yeah.
What about the dual... Well, let's talk about the instructor. Your instructor was Flying Officer Parker. What was he like? What did you think of Flying Officer Parker?
He was very, very good, unlike one of the instructors I met later on. Flying Officer Parker was very good.
What made a good instructor? Do you see what I mean?
Lack of sarcasm. That was the greatest thing. When somebody's sarcastic to you, it demoralises you. But Flying Officer Parker sort of helps you along rather than being sarcastic and saying, instead of saying you're so-and-so fool, what are you doing? He never said that. He was just a born instructor.
And he knew his stuff?
Oh, he did, of course.
A good pilot?
Good pilot, yes, he knew his stuff.
Now, take me through I mean, I've got it in front of you, I'll help you with it as well. Dual control instruction, what were you learning? What was he taking you through at the first? I mean, you'd have to learn to taxi first. Now, what's difficult about taxiing?
With a Tiger Moth, you had no forward view because the engine protruded out in front of you. So when you were taxiing, you never taxiing in a straight line, you had a zigzag round and round. So that was the art in taxiing a Tiger, and you got no brakes. So you couldn't taxi straight, you couldn't go from A to B in a direct line, you had to do this sort of in a swerve around.
So even that you had to learn?
Yes, taxiing. Another thing was the effect of the controls.
Now, tell me about what controls did you have? What controls and instruments did you have in the Tiger Moth?
Well, we had the blind flying panel, which consisted of an altimeter, a compass, speedometer telling you telling you how fast the airplane was going. Then what we call the turn and bank indicator, which looked.
What does that mean?
Well, it showed you it was a picture of an airplane under controls. If your left wing was down, it was reproduced in the picture you saw. If your right wing was down, it was reproduced. You could look at that, even though you might say to yourself, I'm not flying straight and let my wings down. You relied on the turn and bank indicator to tell you the truth.
It was more accurate than your...
Oh, yes, than your perceptions, yes.
So that's the instruments. Now, what about the controls? Can you explain how... Start with the joystick or the control column. How does that work?
Well, the control column, push the control column forward, the nose goes down.
Why? What does it control? Can you explain?
It controls the ailerons, which are on the wings. And they control your descent. If you pull it back, it went up. You put it to one side, it went left. You put it to the other
now
side,
why?
It went right.
What did it control when it pressed to one side?
There was, I believe it was the ailerons as well. It controlled the airflow over the wing. So the wing dropped down.
Now, what other controls do you have?
We had... they're very, very basic. That's about all.
Yeah, the throttle?
Throttle.
How did you adjust the throttle?
It was on the left-hand... Well, when you sat in the cockpit on the left-hand side, just by the entrance door, there was a throttle. You just pushed it back and forward,
and that would change the revs of the engine.
Change the rev of the engine, alter your speed, of course. Yes.
Anything else you can remember that you got in there? Did you have a foot pedal, a rudder?
Yeah. We had the.
It's all right.
We had the. Joystick, we used to call it a joystick. Yeah, then you had the rudder.
Now, what was the rudder? What was that for?
That was for turning you. If you press the rudder, it would yaw to the right, or the airplane would yaw to the left.
So there are different ways of making it turn.
Making it turn, yes.
Now, tell me about taking off. So you've got the... we're talking about when you were the instructor. How do you take off, then? What are the skills he's teaching you to take off? So you don't kill yourself.
Well,
or him.
He tells you. He tells you first of all that every airplane has its takeoff speed. They're not all the same. So the Tiger Moth takeoff speed was about 45-50 miles an hour. So you went forward in a straight line. And once you got to 45-50 miles an hour, you use the stick back, and it would go into the air. But the secret there was not to let the speed get below 40 or 50 miles an hour. If you did, it would spin into the ground, you see.
It would stall and spin. Just,
that was a stalling. And again, every airplane has got its own different stalling speed.
So you took off. Was there anything else you have to watch for when you were taking off? You have to keep it straight, I presume.
You have to keep it straight, yes.
Was that difficult? Would the engine affect, which were, you know, did the engine drag to one side?
No, not at all. Not at all. You alter the direction by either the rudder or the aileron, the joystick.
Now, what do you do when you've taken off? If you're going to do a circuit with the instructor, so there's then using the control to do simple flying straight, level, and turning certain corners.
We used to do what's called circuits and bumps.
Tell me about them.
You take off, fly around the perimeter of the airfield, come back to where you started from at the beginning, and then land.
Now the circuits, so did you find it easy to learn to sort of use the belt? I'm not talking about aerobatics or big turns,
yeah.
But did it take long to get the hang of keeping it straight and level?
No, not really. Straight and level, that came fairly quickly to most of us, be able to control the straight and level situation of the aircraft. That wasn't too difficult. The difficulty was turning and not losing height, because when you banked to turn left or right, if you let your nose slip off the horizon, the turn all right, but he also do a descending turn, which is not good.
Now, what about landing? What are the skills of landing? Because that's the crucial part. There's no point being able to do the other bit if you can't land.
No. Now, what's the crucial part of landing? Obviously, you line up on the runway. Are you all right with that?
Yeah, fine.
We line up on the runway. And as you come over the runway, you gradually ease the speed back. And the aeroplane will start to fall as the speed is lowered. But you must always be cognizant of the fact that if you go below the stalling speed, the aeroplane will fall out of the sky. So you ease the speed back, but not too much, so the aeroplane will still fly, and then it'll just gradually sink onto the runway. And at the last moment, as you're touching the runway, you pull the stick right back, and the aeroplane...
Now, how was it your first view?
Terrible.
What would you do wrong, typically?
Well, one of the things you could typically do wrong was get far too near your stalling speed, and the instructor say, watch your speed. And then another thing was, with the Tiger Moth, when you pull the stick back to touchdown, it looks as if the airplane was going to do a loop. So it was a visual thing which made you think it was going to loop, so you tended not to pull the stick back far enough into your tummy so the wheels would touch down.
And what would happen if you did that?
If you did that...
If you didn't, sort of... You know, if what would be the consequence of not doing it?
Well,
if you didn't pull the stick back far enough,
well, you could fly into the ground.
So you just hit the ground too fast and hard,
and at the right at the wrong angle.
So you had to learn all that.
Oh my God!
Now, were you a quick learner or not? You don't seem to be. I mean, you started on August 21st.
No, I wasn't a particularly quick learner. A lot of pupils soloed in 8 or 9 hours. I think I was 12 hours.
Which is just inside the time, I think. You know. Now, what do you remember about your first solo? But you have a test first, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, but if I may just explain why it took me 12 hours. At one time during my training, I had an Irishman, Sergeant Harding, a Northern Irishman. I was a Southern Irishman. He was my instructor. And he was the absolute antithesis of the first instructor I ever had. He was sarcastic, made you feel very, very small. Even though we were fellow Irishmen, we didn't agree. And after some hours with him, the chief flying instructor sent for me and says, McGoffey says, you don't appear to be making much progress. Well, I said, I'm sorry, sir, but Sergeant Harding and I just don't hit it off. We're fellow Irishmen, we just don't hit it off. And I didn't like his attitude. So I then changed to a flying officer, Parker, who was an American pilot. And he taught me he got me through the course.
That's a bit later.
That's right, yeah.
Now, what do you remember about your first solo? What do you remember about that? You have a test beforehand with Flying Lieutenant Hill.
Yeah, well, what happens... You never know when you're going to go solo. If you're having a test for a driving test, you know the day, date and time. With the RAF, you flew, and then the instructor would just say, you're on your own.
And what do you remember of your first solo?
Absolute joy of it.
That was on the 7th of September, 1942. What do you remember of that flight? I mean, it was only, 10 minutes, it looks like.
Yeah. Well, we didn't fly the solo at Berniston. We went to a satellite airfield, Abbott Bromley, which is about 5 or 6 miles away.
Why'd you go there?
Because of the pressure of all the other students who were hanging, who were trying to learn at the main station at Berniston. And Abbott Bromley was a grass only station. I had no runway, just grass aerodrome. I did my solo there.
Now, what do you remember of it? Tell us anything you remember about it, or just how you felt. You were only up 10 minutes. I can't remember 70 years later.
Well, absolutely. the joy of being in control, captain of your own ship, the joy of being in control, and you shout out and say, my goodness, I'm doing this, I can't believe I'm doing this, still remembering what you've been taught, and just doing the circuit around and doing the landing, and that was it. And then the college would come up and clap you on the back and say, well done.
Did you do a good landing?
Oh yes, I had no problem. In fact, in all my career, I never had any bad landings, either in gliders or powered aircraft.
Now, where did your training go from there then? You've done your first solo, and then it just carries on. But what are you trying to learn now? You seem to do a lot of powered and gliding approach landings. Is that because you're going on to...
Gliders. Yes.
Now, tell me about that. What's the difference between a powered and a gliding approach? Because you seem to do one of each every day for the next... Well, more than that. You're doing two... Three, four, five, six, powered and landing.
Yeah, well, the gliding approach was where you went to a predetermined there and you switched off your engine and you glided in and only restarted your engine when you were due to land. So it got you used to gliding without an engine, you see, even though it was a powered aircraft. And the powered approach was the normal approach where you approach the objective with your... using your engine.
Did you find it difficult using a gliding approach?
Yeah, because obviously there weren't gliders in the true sense of the word, and they tended to drop rather quickly, rather than in the glider you get a more not so fast drop of height in a glider as you do with a powered aircraft. But the engine switched off, it drops rather rapidly. But it taught you what to expect on approaching without an engine. It was just the basics of getting used to the gliders.
Now, you move on to learning other things. Now, what about aerobatics, as they call them, or general? What do you remember about some of that? Let's start with a loop. Do you remember how you did a loop?
Yes. You made sure the air around you was clear, no other aircraft. You went to about 5,000 or 6,000 feet. Put the throttle fully open, so the engine was at full revs. Dive down, then pull the stick back into your tummy, and your head was back, and as soon as you saw the horizon appear on the other side, you centralised your throttle and just sort of semi-glided down again. So it was full throttle, dive down, back, up on your back, as soon as you saw the horizon on the other back of you, switch the throttle to half setting and carry on flying.
Now that's the thing about accurate flight. I mean, any fool can put it up and fall out of it on either side. Yeah. It's the thing about accuracy. Did you take to it?
Yeah. The thing was not to lose too much height when you're doing a loop-de-loop. You should come back to the same height as when you started. But you never got really near there. It was difficult.